This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And on the line with us is Dr. Rosalind Layton. Rosalind Layton is a visiting fellow with the Center for Internet Communications and Technology Policy at the right-leaning American Enterprise Institute, AEI.org is the website. Dr. Layton, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Today there's this day of action on net neutrality, and I understand you and the American Enterprise Institute are speaking out on behalf of the giant telco companies that want to be able to slice and dice the internet and basically, in my opinion, screw us all. And I'm wondering why, what kind of argument can you possibly make that Comcast should be able to look into my traffic and say, oh, he's going and looking at news sites, we're going to charge him X. Or, oh, he's streaming video, we're going to charge him Y. And I'm not talking about the volume of data. We already bill based on volume, and I have no problem with that. But, you know, what we've done with telephone service is we've said, this is a utility. And the phone company cannot listen into my phone conversation and say, oh, he's talking to his mom, we'll just charge him a penny a minute for that. Oh, he's talking to his boss, he's negotiating a raise, let's charge him 20 cents a minute for that. Why should internet companies be able to do that?
Well, first, Tom, it's really I love your show. It's just an honor to be here and speak with you. And you got, there's a lot to unpack there, but let me just give first things first. I speak for myself. I am with the American Enterprise Institute. And, personally, for most of my work in this issue, I have been working in Copenhagen with the university funded through the Danish government. So my research really reflects what I have learned in looking at this issue in over 50 countries around the world. So what I think is what's important to note here is that there's no one here who's against a free and open internet. I think
yes, there is.
Well, I'm not.
Comcast has got three active lawsuits against our government right now to try and shut down the free and open internet.
Well, so first of all, I think we
need to define... And they're supported by the American Enterprise Institute.
Okay. Not actually true. What I understand the free and open internet to be, and you know, maybe different people have different definitions about that, the debate here is really about the legal instrument that we use. And my research of over 50 countries now that have these rules, they have made these rules through Congress, through legislation and the will of the people. And the concern here is that the approach taken by the FCC in 2015 was using a particular legal instrument which allows the FCC, Federal Communications Commission, the ability to set prices, to discriminate traffic, in fact, the ability to prioritize some things over the other, and the ability to add taxes to unbundle networks and so on. So I think that you're right, as you say with your book, we all have the same objective. We all want to make things better, but we have different ways that we want to get there. I want to see this enshrined in Congress the way most of the world's countries do. I'm really concerned about empowering five unelected officials with the ability to control our communications network.
Well, here's the problem that we have, Dr. Layton. We have a Congress that, thanks to the United States Supreme Court, with decisions from Buckley versus Vallejo to First National Bank versus Bilotti to Citizens United to McCutcheon, that has basically turned control of our legislative process over to a small group of very, very wealthy people and very large corporations. And those folks are writing the legislation to benefit themselves. As I'm sure you know, net neutrality is overwhelmingly popular in the United States. And having corporations like Comcast and Time Warner and AT&T slice and dice the internet and then charge us for the bits and pieces, is not popular with the American people. And I still haven't heard an answer to my question, how is it a good thing for us that Comcast, my internet service provider, can start legally looking into every single thing I'm doing on the internet and charge me different prices based on that? Because that is explicitly the business model that these cable TV companies, particularly Comcast, which also owns NBC and MSNBC, are trying to promote.
Okay, so I want to make sure I get to your actual question. What you're talking about is an ISP looking in, I think what you mean is with DPAC and inspection?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so that is something that is it's not the same issue, and maybe, you know, we have different understandings about what this is about. That is the issue of DPAC and inspection is not what the particular problem that's defined here, as I understand.
Okay, well, let's just set that aside then and just say, okay, you know, particular IP addresses or particular websites. You know, I mean, when cable was evolving, the original sales pitch was, you know, we're going to give you hundreds of channels. It's going to be a wonderful thing. Just give us public rights of way. And you know, let us use the public, you know, all this public infrastructure, and we'll bring cable to your home. And then once they had essentially a monopoly, it was like, oh, you want MSNBC? That's an extra $5 a month. Oh, you want HBO? That's an extra $10 a month. Whatever. I mean, you know, and it wasn't just obviously the cable companies. They were collaborating with companies that were making money on this. But the slicing and dicing of cable TV has caused the United States to have among the highest cable TV prices in the world, in some cases by an order of magnitude. And these same companies want to do the same thing to the internet. And I don't understand how anybody could defend that.
Okay, so we've got two issues here. You've got cable TV pricing and broadband pricing. So, you know, cable TV pricing is a whole ball of wax that you also have to look at the amount of content and the amount of channels and so forth and so on. That's one discussion. But here's the other issue with broadband, and I'm going to give you a consumer perspective, because, you know, here's what my concern about this is, you're trying to say, you're making a rule that you have to have a flat rate internet service, you need to contact all endpoints, and that's good for the consumer. Me as the consumer, you're actually making me pay for content that I don't want and that I'm never going to see. So, for example, YouTube and Netflix, they take up more than 50% of the traffic on the internet. I actually never subscribe to Netflix. I don't really watch YouTube. So I'm actually paying more for content I'm never going to see. This is really an issue when you get into adult material, which is actually quite a large part of the internet for people who have moral or religious or different concerns. They're unwittingly subsidizing the delivery of content that they have objections to. So what I would say is, why are we denying the consumer the ability to say, hey, I would like to have some things for free. I'd like to have some things that I pay for. I would like it, you content company, I would like you to deliver it to me, and it's okay if you give me advertising. So that's what we're sort of, this is the trade-off here.
The answer to your question, Dr. Layden, is very simple. The reason why you should pay for that traffic is because it's a public good. The argument that you're making is virtually identical to the argument that conservatives, particularly in Virginia from 1957 until 1961, were making when they shut down public schools in Prince Edward County so that black people couldn't go to school, which was, I don't have kids in school. My kids are grown up. Why should I pay property taxes for public schools? Why should we even have public schools? I don't need them. Well, the bottom line is that all of society is benefited by having an educated society. Right. Similarly, all of society is benefited by having a wide open library. The internet is now the public. It's the library of the world.
Well,
and you know, we don't say, oh, we're not going to have a public library just because your kids don't use it.
Mr. Hartman, empirically, we know that the majority of the traffic of the internet is entertainment. We all have different concepts of what entertainment should be. The most socially valuable part of the internet is less than 1%. It is such small amounts of data. It's health information. It is information around, you know, the bus schedule. It's communicating to your relatives, SMS, extremely small, discrete amount of data. I'm personally willing to advocate that we make some parts of public good, make it absolutely free. All government websites, for example, healthcare.gov, you know, everything related to health.
But you are still trusting these giant monopolistic corporations to tell you what you can and cannot watch at what price and speed.
I studied the data myself. I know that when you make me have the only choice I have to pay is one price for the whole thing, I'm paying for stuff that I don't need.
You know, the United Nations and Canada have both declared the internet to be a human right.
we should be enabling for the poorest people of the world the most valuable information. And the good news is that it's actually a small amount of data. It would not be hard to, you know, make that essentially free for everyone. And why shouldn't, if you have a different concept?
Well, that's, you know, take this back to the public school argument. This is what you're saying is, well, you shouldn't worry about the fact that there's no public schools. You can always homeschool your kids. Those books are not all that expensive. In fact, you can check them out at the library for free.
Well, and actually, let's talk about public schools. We can actually enable online education quite easily with a very small amount of data. We can do it and on low-speed networks because the design and the technology is there.
Online education is, it's a completely different topic. But B, if it becomes popular, then Comcast will say, oh, look at that, they want to homeschool their kids. They're trying to avoid $5,000 a year or $10,000 a year in school tuition. Let's charge them $5,000 a year for the homeschool information.
Let's say Comcast does that, okay? I would highly doubt that they would. We have today stop them to do it? Because, well, first of all, we have layers of laws.
Dr. Layton, Comcast screws us all regularly. Go to Europe and look
live in Europe. Okay?
Yeah, okay, then you know. If you look at the cable systems there, they're using literally 21st century technology.
No.
If you've got a Comcast cable box, you're using systems that were developed in the 90s.
The internet connections in Europe are delivered over DSL, okay? They have half the rate of fiber to the home than we do. So that's not actually true.
Well, it depends on how you define Europe. If you want to talk about Western Europe or Northern Europe, completely different story than if you're going to include all the old former Soviet states.
Right. Well, I'm fine. And we can go country by country. But when you want to talk about the European Union, two-thirds...
Well, let's talk about France.
Okay, France is a great example. This is a case where they've wanted to have subsidies to have fiber to the home, and that's been the national policy. Unfortunately, they have a lower rate of fiber. They have one of the lowest rates of fiber because it has turned out to be very expensive, and they keep trying to do it.
It's not about who's got the fiber and who does. In France, as the New York Times pointed out last year, in France, for $30 a month, you get 100 MIPS down, 50 MIPS up. You get cell phone service in over 30 countries, and you get over 200 channels of television. I mean, it's a fraction of the cost here. And the main reason actually is because they've got the law that whoever owns the copper going into the house has to rent that copper to any ISP. There's over 100 ISPs in France.
Well, because you know why? That is not the real. That's
it's because
the
they encourage competition.
Hey, that is not true. You can go to rural parts of France. There is next to no broadband connection. I'm sorry. Talk to your friends who spend the summer in France. They'll tell you it's a disaster.
Well, I spent part of the summer in France actually, including rural.
Maybe you're lucky enough to be in that place. But
yeah.
That is
okay. Dr. Layton, we're not going to resolve this, I don't think, today, but thank you for dropping by.
Thank you. I hope we can get Congress to resolve it.
Okay. Dr. Rosalind Layton, AEI.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back with your calls, my thoughts, and the news of the day right after this. And welcome back. Doug in Fort Collins, Colorado. Hey, Doug, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Oh, my pleasure, and thanks again for all you do. I was making calls to the FCC today to tell them I support Title II and not to change it. And I found making my point that when I was talking to Republicans, I told them this. I said, Comcast owns NBC, and they're my service provider. Would you like it if I could watch MSNBC and have it stream really good, broadband speed? But if I want to watch Fox News, it would come through like dial-up? Would they want to support something like that?
Right.
So no matter what side of the issue you're on, there's always somebody who's going to get cut out. And like the lady you were talking to, like, I don't think I should have to pay for people to surf porn or whatever her argument was.
Right.
It's the same argument they make with taxes. Why should I pay taxes and stuff like that? Like you said, for the schools.
Right.
And we don't realize we're a common society. We all pay for everybody else and they all pay for us.
Right.
So I just say, keep it equal. We can't be discriminating on information.
Well, and her, I hope Congress can fix this, is a way of saying, blow out the FCC, do away with the Title II regulations, and let's turn this thing over to the big corporations. Congress right now is controlled by the big corporations. Page and Gillens did this study out of, I think it was Northwestern University, might have been Columbia, what, 2 years ago, where they found that if you're in the top 10% of Americans, the probabilities of legislation getting passed that you want is like 60, 70%. If you're in the top 1%, the probabilities are like 80, 90%. If you're in the bottom 90% of Americans economically, the probability of Congress passing legislation that you are in favor of is equal to random noise. It is unmeasurable. There is no measurable association between what the public wants. For example, only 12% of the public wants the Republican health care bill and what Congress votes on. And that's something that everybody should know about. As I was trying to say to Dr. Layton, as Jimmy Carter said on this program, we're no longer a democracy. We're an oligarchy. And she's arguing for the oligarchs to make the laws. And I'm wary of that. I think that Title II works just fine.
I try to turn my white noise up as loud as possible. I've called my senator twice a day for like the last 2 months, telling him what I think about health care. Asking more about his town halls. So the best I can do is make a lot of noise. It might be white noise, but they are definitely going to get tired of hearing from me.
Have you been successful in getting through to Cory Gardner's office?
Yeah, a few times.
You're calling local offices?
Yeah. What surprised me is when I call his D.C. office first, and I give him my SKU.
Right.
Sometimes it'll automatically bump back to my local office. I'm like, I just spoke with you a minute ago.
Huh.
And I realized that both the local office and the D.C. office go to one place.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, he's like, she explained, oh, well, they're busy there, and they just route their calls back.
Right.
And I'm like, well, I want to talk to somebody in D.C. I want to talk to as many people as I can.
Right.
And I pester them is really what I'm doing.
Yeah, because what I've been finding and what people have been reporting to us on this program is that if you try to call the D.C. office of pretty much any elected Republican right now, you don't get through. You get voicemail. And if you try to sign up for a town hall, with any of these Republican members of Congress, House or Senate, they're not doing them. And, you know, the only, like Paul Ryan, the only thing he's doing is the so-called phone town halls, where he gets to pick what questions to answer. Nobody can say anything because everybody's phone is muted, and he gets to pontificate. And it's bizarre. Anyhow, Doug, good on you for being a citizen lobbyist. And thanks for the call. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Dwayne in London, England, watching us on YouTube. Hey, Dwayne, what's on your mind today?
Good afternoon or good morning, Tom. You've got an excellent show, and I just was compelled to call you today.
Thank you.
I was listening to the doctor that you had on earlier, who was saying that they're not interested necessarily in deep packet inspection. I should point out, first of all, that I've worked all over America, and I've worked all over Europe. And I know about the net neutrality issue because I've been an expert in building internet networks for all of the major providers around the world, and I've worked for cellular operators. So I'm familiar with this very, very much.
Okay.
Now, here is...
What am I missing? What am I missing, Dwayne?
You're not missing anything. The trick here is that, as you can see, Comcast have been buying up content providers in the sense that you and I know them as NBC or various television broadcasters. A lot of the younger people and the next generation coming through don't watch television in the way that you and I may do, as in sitting down in front of the TV of an evening. They watch TV on the go, so they'll watch it on their iPhones, they'll watch it on their tablets, and the way they get their content is over the internet. And the way that the cable companies or telecommunications companies, what they want to do, as you've seen in Europe, the British Telecom has now got effectively a cable service. And you see in Germany, Deutsche Telekom, and in America, you've got a Comcast and AT&T. What they've started to do is buy up content. In that means to you and me, television shows, movies, etc.
Right. And they're doing that so that they can favor that content, presumably, when they blow up net neutrality.
Exactly. So what they want to do is effectively say, oh, well, because you're on Comcast, we will allow you to watch NBC and Ultra HD television. But if you're not, you can't watch it on right. Ultra HD television coming over the internet or your phone or your cellular phone. They want to also, if you look at what they've been doing, they've been spending huge amounts of money on buying up the rights to broadcast, sports broadcasting rights, so that they can force their customers or give preferential treatment to their customers to watch that content. That's what's behind this move with killing off net neutrality. They want to be able to prefer their own content over anybody else's coming over the internet. The cable argument is a red herring. It's got nothing to do with it.
I agree.
It's about the traffic that comes over the internet. And the only way, there's two ways to do that. They either look at what you're looking, what traffic, what IP addresses are going from point A to point B, or they do, they look with deep packet inspection tools, as you mentioned to her, and they look at it that way, which right. is an invasion of privacy in anybody's language.
Yep.
And that's what's behind this. And then they also want to sell you this service on your cellular phone. So if you're on a certain cellular provider, you can get the content. You can watch the Super Bowl, or you can watch the champion, you know, the soccer or something like that. That's what's behind it. It's about money.
Yep.
That's fundamentally what these guys are trying to do, is to tear up the net neutrality so they can basically hog more money off people.
Yeah, I got it.
More money.
Dwayne, spot on. I'm sorry we're hitting a hard break here, but thank you so much, Dwayne.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
We'll be back with more of your calls, my thoughts, and the news of the day right after this. You can support the Tom Hartman Program and see video of our entire three-hour show over at patreon.com/Tom Hartman. That's amazing. There's an article in VentureBeat.com from 2014 that somebody tweeted, as I recall. Let me get over and just see if this... Did I get this off Twitter? Yeah, P. Duffy tweeted this to me, and I thought I might have seen it in our chat room. It wouldn't surprise me if it's there, too. But this What France Has Taught Me article is amazing. It's by Chris O'Brien. And he says, our family moved to Toulouse, France in late August after living in the San Francisco Bay Area for 15 years. And he's talking about when he was in San Francisco. He says, we subscribed to Comcast broadband, which gave us 25 MIPS download speed for $85 a month. We didn't have cable or home telephone. For mobile, we had two iPhones on AT&T's network for $144 a month. We had 450 minutes of calling time, not including nights and weekends. My wife's phone had 2 gigs of data each month, while mine had a grandfathered unlimited plan. And he goes through all this. So roughly, he's paying $229 a month for telecom. He says, now we live in the center, city center of Toulouse, France, in an apartment where I'm a broadband customer of a company called Numericable. Here's what I get for $63 a month. 100 MIP download speed, 250 cable channels, a home telephone with unlimited international calling, and a mobile phone that includes unlimited minutes and 3 gigs of data usage each month. He says, separately, I'm getting ready to sign my wife up for the $20 a month mobile plan with mobile provider free that comes with unlimited calling and 3 gigs of data. So our telecom costs here in France are $83 a month, about one third of the cost of the United States for services that are astronomically superior. Trust me when I say you don't know how truly awful things are in the United States when it comes to broadband and wireless until you leave. Not only have I experienced this, but I was reminded of it again with a story in the New York Times, why the U.S. has fallen behind in internet speed and affordability. And that talked about a study, the cost of connectivity. And then he makes this statement, and this is absolutely brilliant. He says, government has played a strong, this is my big lesson from living in France. He says, government has played a strong role in ensuring competition. And that competition has increased choice and driven down prices for consumers. And he says, go ahead, America, read that last sentence a few times. I know it probably makes your head hurt. And it's just, you know, he says, unfortunately, a gullible American public has swallowed whole the idea that either you believe in government regulation or you believe in free markets. And the government intervention is the enemy of innovation and competition. Actually, it's the opposite. Government has played a strong role in ensuring competition. And that increases choice and drives down prices. So anyhow, just an FYI. Kitty in Boca Raton, Florida. Hey, Kitty, thanks for listening to us on Sirius. What's up?
I just want to say first cheers to the gentleman in England for his insight and information, because after all, this is what it's about. It's about the free flow of information for all of humanity. So I really much appreciate his insight on that. And second, I want to say that that interview made me sick. It made me sick to my stomach, because there is no defense of what the doctor is trying to do. It is just for money. And the thing is, I just watched the other night this show on Vice about how superior everybody else has. It's just exactly what you were just saying, how Americans, our tax dollars, have helped create this whole internet. And we have the slowest, one of the slowest and the most expensive. So we're not number one. We're the number one suckers.
Yeah,
we get to pay more for crappier service.
Yep, for internet and for healthcare.
Yep,
and for banking.
Yep, I mean, and that's why That's why it starts to build on you as a person in this country, because you're like, wait a second, I work really hard and I make okay money, but I pay a lot of money in taxes. What are my taxes going towards to help start these things? America is a wonderful country for innovation. And I mean, am I incorrect by saying that we basically had the major role of creating the internet?
We did create the internet. It was funded by the federal government, by DARPA. It was originally called DARPANET. The defense, I forget what DARPA stands for other than the D is defense. Defense Advanced Research Program or something like that project. Yeah, in any case,
DARPA
we did it.
Money?
Pardon?
How does DARPA get its money to do these things?
DARPA got its money from your and my taxes.
Yes.
We invented the internet.
For the world.
Yeah.
We created this. I feel like I had a personal role in it because, again, I pay my taxes.
Yeah.
This is my internet that I paid for. And now she's trying to convince me and other people to go against her own best interest. There is a spin to it. It's not, she's not talking truth. All she's trying to do is spin something to make people go against their own best interest. That's my internet that I paid for to help create. And it's about the free flow of information of this world. And I come from a time, like, I'm old enough now to look back at the way it used to be to the way it is now. I'm in amazement that I can get on my computer and have an instant conversation with a customer of ours in Australia, where before, the same person, maybe 15, 20 years ago, would have to use a ham radio to get in touch. The free flow of communication, the free flow of information, it's for humanity. And it was my doing, just as much as yours as an American citizen. And this woman is not going to convince me to go against my own best interest. In fact, this interview makes me want to call my senators and congressmen every single second of every day to tell them, do not do this. Do not do this to the world. Do not do this to humanity. It is a decline. And I encourage anybody who's listening to your show that this is a big enough, this is a huge, huge matter. Huge. I think it's beyond healthcare. I think it's beyond a lot because it's the free flow of information. I get to learn things about places of the world that otherwise I would never be able to know. And they want to charge me every time I want to learn something about this planet that I live in to talk to my fellow the humanity and to talk to other people across the world in the way that I feel unrestricted without having to be a rich person to be able to pay for it. This is insane.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate your program more than you know. I've always said this. I really think, Tom, that you're the right person to get into politics because you're a decent man and you're intelligent. And I think you have your thumb on the button.
Well, thank you, Kitty. It's you just did a brilliant rant. You should be a talk show host. If you're going to say I should be a politician, I'll honor you back. Kitty, I've got to move along. But thank you so much for the call and for a really, truly great rant. It's great to hear from you. Thank you. Karen in Columbus, Ohio. Hey, Karen, what's on your mind?
Well, I'm watching the show. Hi, Tom, by the way. And quite honestly, I think that Dr. Layton either doesn't know about peering or is choosing to ignore that, because here's the deal with content service or content providers themselves. If you run a website, you have to pay an ISP or something to host a site.
Right.
People are already doing this.
Yep.
And so if you don't want to have adult content, or if you don't look at YouTube or whatever entertainment things that she doesn't do, that's fine. You're not going to do it. It's
right.
Nothing.
And you can buy a cheaper service, by the way. You can say, you know, I don't need 100 MIPS of download speed. I can do 5 MIPS of download speed because I'm just going to do simple HTML stuff and, you know, get a super discount package.
Exactly. We already regulate it like water, how much you use or...
Yeah, but not how you use it. We don't, you know, the water company doesn't say, oh, you're taking a bath, you know, or you're drinking this water. Those are essential functions. So we're going to charge you $10 a gallon for that water. But if you're mowing the lawn, that's not an essential function. So we'll give you that water for 5 cents a gallon. They don't do that. They're not allowed to do that.
Conditions of the water. We're not allowed to have lead in the water past a certain point, things like that.
Right.
And here's the deal. She talks about 5 unelected individuals in the SPC. Yes, that's true. However, we have even less unelected individuals running these ISPs.
That's right. Who elected the head of Comcast? Right.
Sorry, what was that?
Who elected the head of Comcast?
Exactly. We don't have a choice in some cases. ISPs have done a great job at consolidating themselves and doing away with any sort of municipal broadband initiative and all this stuff. And quite honestly, there's one thing I want to say, and that's Ajit Pai, the chairman of the FCC, is a big fan of Big Lebowski. and his quote, open and free internet rules that basically do away with net neutrality and Title II protection. It would be like allowing the ISP CEOs to come in and pee all over the internet rug.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. Karen, thank you very much. We'll be back. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Anytime you get the Big Lebowski and a metaphor coming down the road, you start going, uh-oh. Anyhow, we'll be right back. And welcome back. Oh, man. What are they, huh? Chuck in Riverside, California, watching us on YouTube. Hey, Chuck, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. I had a quick question. I wanted to get your opinion on what you think the Democrats, how you think the Democratic Party is going to run in 2020. Because I think you and I both know that the best option to defeat Trump is to run a Bernie Sanders-type candidate, someone who's truly progressive, who's truly fighting for the people, who doesn't have all the external corporate interests behind them. But I'm starting to sort of fear that the Democratic primaries in 2020 are going to be like the Republican primaries or like 2012, where it's just like a state people who are just trying to get the best zingers, so that way more people will know their name. Because, you know, I know that Bernie, it's seeming to me that Bernie's going to run again. It seems like Elizabeth Warren's going to run this time. But I also hear that people, senators and representatives like Tulsi Gabbard and Kamala Harris are going to run. And I even heard a rumor that Caroline Kennedy might throw her hat in the ring. And I'm not saying that those are bad people, but I'm a bit afraid of having so many people clashing as opposed to having sort of a more clear and concise vision.
Yeah.
And especially if it's like a Bernie Hillary opposition.
Well, that's inevitably going to happen. I mean, that's intrinsic to the primary process. And right now you can watch particularly Cory Booker and Kamala Harris are positioning themselves to be sort of the middle of the road Democrats, or, you know, the liberal Democrats, but not Bernie-crats, as the candidates. And then you've got Elizabeth Warren, who up until last week, I was skeptical that she really wanted to run. But then, you know, she made that trip to Afghanistan and stuff. I mean, she's doing the things that people do when they're planning on running for political office. Although it may have been just, you know, she was on a committee and it was important to go on that meeting, but or on that trip rather. But I'm seeing the Democratic Party kind of splitting into camps, and those camps slowly moving forward. And you know, it's gonna depend on what kind of response they get, on what kind of response they get from the donor class, on what kind of response they get from the base, on what kind of response they get, you know, when they try to go out there. Cory Booker, for example, you know, when he got caught with his hand in the cookie jar around the pharmaceutical stuff, you know, that he had voted against legislation that would have allowed the importation of drugs after taking lots and lots of money from pharma. He has, you know, he got outed for that, and he's now come out and said, I'm not taking any more money from pharma. Well, you know, but he's still taking money from the banks. And so, you know, is there going to be, I mean, how many things? So it's like, you know, it's interesting to watch, you know, how this is playing out. But everybody wants to be the next Obama or the next, you know, Bill Clinton, I guess. And I think that the times have moved past that, Chuck. I agree with you. I think that only the next Bernie, and maybe even Bernie, although, you know, 76 is going to be quite a lift. But only the next Bernie can, I think, really take on the Republican Party and win. We need another FDR.
Yeah. And another very quick, short question. If it's not Bernie, like if he doesn't run, or, you know, if he just doesn't win the primaries, which I highly doubt if he does run, who would you want to see run?
Elizabeth Warren. I would put my money on Elizabeth Warren in a heartbeat. I think she's spectacular. Chuck, I got to run, but thank you very much for the call. And thanks for watching us on YouTube. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Let's check in with Talk Media News and find out what's going on in the world today. This report brought to you by Ellen Ratner's new book, Loving What You Do, and goatsfortheoldgoat.com. On the line with us is Ellen Ratner herself. Hey, Ellen.
That's right. Okay, well, another off-camera briefing by Sarah Huckabee Sanders today. They just are not doing on-camera briefings.
I have two possible reasons for that, and I'm curious your take on this, if I may interrupt you, Ellen.
Go ahead.
Okay. Number one, they're not doing on-camera briefings because Donald Trump is jealous that some other people in his administration are getting more FaceTime than him. Or number two, they're not doing on-camera briefings because they knew if they do it on camera, there's video evidence of it. And when Trump tweets something that contradicts them the next day, it'll be trotted out and they'll look like a fool. Which is it? Or is it both?
Both. It's actually both, but I'm going to go with the first one. If I had to go to a 60-40, I'm going to go with 60 on the first one and 40 on the second.
Okay. All right. Thank you. But forgive my interrupting.
Both, actually.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the president has already left, actually, for France. He's going to have dinner tomorrow night, I guess, at the Eiffel Tower, on top of the Eiffel Tower, with the president of France. And then he'll be there for Bastille Day. It's also the 100th anniversary of the United States entering World War I. So he's going to be, there's going to be some participation by our armed forces in that as well. Now, today, this is very interesting. Christopher Wray is up for FBI director.
Right.
He was asked whether he would be independent, and he was very clear about that. He said that he would absolutely be independent, that he was reliant on the Constitution of the United States. That's where his allegiance was, and it was not to any president. He was then asked very specific questions about the Mueller case, et cetera, Mueller being the special independent counsel. And he really sort of side-swiped on that one, didn't really answer. And then actually Dianne Feinstein asked about the torture memos. By the way, the tough questions about his allegiance were asked by none other than Lindsey Graham, who's not exactly a Democrat. Of course, he did run for president. But then Dianne Feinstein asked about the torture memo. He said he had no input into the torture memo. Kind of interesting.
Although didn't another member point out that his name was cited in the torture memo, that John Yu and Jay Bybee just used him?
He was cited, but he said he remembers nothing and that he did not have input into it. So I don't know who you believe.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I would believe anybody over John Yu or Jay Bybee, frankly. Back to you.
This is interesting. The Democrats, Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut, is calling on all of this is profoundly troubling and should be investigated by the special prosecutor. This has to do with Donald Jr. Meeting with that supposedly person from the Kremlin, although she said she's not from the Kremlin. So anyhow, he's calling for more investigation onto that. Today is also the Net Neutrality Day of Action. And the head of the Democratic National Committee is talking about that, saying, call your member of Congress and demand net neutrality.
Yeah. And
also,
we just debated somebody from the AEI, American Enterprise Institute, telling us how wonderful it would be to destroy net neutrality. It was bizarre.
Oh, please, give me a break.
Yeah.
You and I'd be paying through the nose.
Yep. Well, that's the whole point. You know, it's all about the money.
It's all about the money. That is for sure. Okay. Now, it's very interesting. Yesterday, we actually, through our own defense agency, we actually put up a fake missile, and we shot it down in Kodiak, Alaska. They tracked and intercepted the target, and so that's kind of interesting. Also, the DEA, that's the Drug Enforcement Agency, went after Mallinckrodt, and it looks like they may have gotten something like $25 million. I don't know the exact amount, but they are now saying that Mallinckrodt is not giving, when they see false prescriptions being written, they're supposed to notify the FDA, and they have not been doing that.
What or who is Mallinckrodt?
It's one of the drug companies.
Ah, okay. One of the ones that makes opiates?
In fact, they've been around a million years because in my late teens, I was in the Mallinckrodt unit at Mass General, where they actually do all kinds of testing to see if, you know, you're shutting off growth hormone and all that kind of stuff.
Huh,
I don't know if it still exists, but it did exist then. So they've been around as a drug company for a very long period of time.
Okay.
All right. Now, some other issues going on. It looks like Now, this is a big concern to everybody, and should be. I was in Antarctica. I went was given a trip there for my 60th birthday. I'm now an old bat, older than that. But one of the biggest icebergs ever recorded broke away from one of the shelves, the Larsen C shelf in Antarctica. I was actually on the Larsen shelf. I don't know if I was on a Larsen C or not, but I was definitely on Larsen. And they said that it's 6,000 square kilometers, about a quarter of the size of the country or the area, whatever you want to call it, of Wales.
Yeah, it's the same size as Delaware, I guess.
I think so.
Huge.
It's very, very large. It broke off. Now they're saying that it is not going to rise the oceans because, of course, it was already there, but that it's calving because it's getting warm is a major concern in Antarctica.
Yeah, and if you go to arctic-news.blogspot.com, it was raining in the Arctic last week. I mean, it's like, and
wow.
It's not supposed to
it's
rain
supposed to
in
snow.
The Arctic.
It's supposed to snow.
Right. It's 60 degrees warmer than it's supposed to be. And I mean, it's just, the weather has gone crazy. It's just, anyway, back to you, Ellen.
Okay. Also, there. This is very interesting. The Federal Trade Commission has banned two telemarketing firms from doing business in Maryland. What they were doing is they would call up a place like yours or mine and say, oh, we have some free material for you. Do you want to do it? So, of course, you know, being stupid, somebody like me would say yes. And then we would get a bill for them. So now they are absolutely, the FDA is saying you cannot do telemarketing at all. And these are two Maryland-based companies.
Interesting.
Now, last but not least here, the New Jersey governor, Chris Christie's fixer at the Port Authority, is going to avoid prison. However, he has got to do 500 hours of community service. It's David Wildstein, I guess is his name. He has to serve 3 years probation, pay a $10,000 fee, $14,314 in restitution, but he does not have to do jail time. Now, how this is going to affect Chris Christie will be very interesting because, of course, so far he's sort of gotten away with absolutely nothing. And what's really interesting, when he was running for president, I actually heard him in Iowa, and he was asked what he would do his first day at the presidency, and he gave a Trump-like answer. He said, well, I'd fire people that weren't loyal. I believe in loyalty.
Right.
I mean, this is a guy that was running for president of the United States.
I want to say Bridget or Gretchen, it's a Germanic name, the woman who was his kind of press secretary person, right hand, didn't she flip? I mean, she got sentenced to jail time, didn't she? Didn't somebody turn on him? I mean,
I actually think what happened is most of the people that worked with him actually did turn on him and say that he ordered it.
On Christie.
It may have only been two out of the three, but I think
right.
There were three people originally, and they turned on him. Yes, because they realized that they're going to go nowhere. Now, we're also hearing, you're not going to believe this, sit down for this one, Tom, that he is thinking, Chris Christie is thinking of taking a talk sports job.
Yeah, I know. He auditioned for it the day before yesterday, I think it was, and somebody called up and said, called him a, well, I don't want to, you
right.
know, call him a slur, shall we say.
You don't want to say it on radio.
Yeah, right, right. Well, I think you can say it on radio. It's just disrespectful to people who are overweight, so I'm not going to, but
right.
Yeah. Ellen Ratner with Talk Media News. Ellen, it is always great talking with you. You are
Thank
the
you.
Most informative out there. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll be back. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.